Hey James, how you doing?
Hey Joel, how you doing?
Not too bad. I have my cup of tea.
Oh, it's good.
There's plenty of room noise, which is good.
It's nice. It's comfy. It sounds like we're recording in a railway station.
And then my phone goes
off. And then your phone goes off as well. The loudest notification thing
bloody
in
perfect.
The world. I'm just going to be spamming you with text messages
the whole time.
Recording.
So we get the Nintendo Switch click
all the time.
I think it's people asking me about work stuff, so they can wait upwards of 40 minutes. We have no tweets, so I'm just going to leave Sam to do that when he records his episode for the month.
Nice.
So, without further ado, let's play the music! Welcome to the Video Shop Podcast, about what you're watching, maybe. I'm your host, Cal.
And I'm James, filling in for Sam now that he's been expatriated back to,
UK. he's been deported.
Yeah.
Now, I like it. But you're the new other host.
Nice.
That's how it works. This is the official version of the podcast. Whatever Sam records is bullshit, and it's probably going to be full with a bunch of Disney nonsense.
Yeah.
So, that is how things are rolling from now on. And this week, we are talking about 1917, the DreamWorks picture.
Yeah, just having a look at that, didn't realize DreamWorks were making non-animated things.
Because DreamWorks did, like, Shrek and stuff.
Yeah, I didn't see the DreamWorks face in this once.
from the company that brought you Shrek, brings you
1917. Interestingly enough, the film is set in 1917.
What?
Yeah. Is about the First World War.
Because that's what was happening.
Yeah,
in 1917.
Really, really interesting film, man.
I was expecting something more along the lines of...
like Saving Private Ryan? Or...
No, what was the one we watched that I fucked up the recording of and we couldn't release it?
I know.
Yeah, the one with the it has like the ticking clock in the background.
Oh, yeah, that's
everything.
Right. Christopher Nolan's one.
Yeah,
which...
yeah.
It's Dunkirk.
Dunkirk, I was going to say. Yeah. It's named after like the location.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was expecting more like Dunkirk, like a little bit more of a, like, this is, like, a bigger war strategy thing that's going on that needs to be, like, there's a like, bigger goal to achieve.
Yeah, like, coordinated
between
people behind the... Yeah, but no, it was literally just a story about just two guys, on their way, on a walk. Through.
They go on a relaxing stroll.
Yeah, basically.
Through the front lines of the trenches.
Yeah. Real intense stuff. The whole thing and the whole gimmick of this film. If you had to sum it up, you're just saying it's a film about World War One and it's shot as like one continuous take.
Yeah, which I have mixed feelings about because they clearly don't like 100% commit to that because it's a shit idea. Like he gets knocked out a couple of times and it's like, oh well, here's a clear like
cut. Yeah. It was interesting because like I don't know if it was good or if it was distracting. It was interesting to shoot a film like this. But I think the problem was because if you go into it knowing it's one continual cut, you're looking for where they might have cut it.
Yeah, definitely.
I was like, oh look, it's panning across this wooden beam, that's where they could sneak a cut in.
Yeah.
Or something's happened here, that must be where they snuck a cut in.
Yeah, or even just the camera sort of pans over the character and the character moves out of frame so they can reposition him. And like, so I'm thinking, so is that one shot or did they lock the camera there, move him and then continue the shot afterwards?
That was the thing, like beautiful shots and to be able to frame it like that and do it. Because some of those, even if the whole movie obviously isn't one continual, wasn't filmed as one continual take, there are scenes there that would have been really long one continual take scenes. But yeah, as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, I didn't want to blink. Like, it was tense, but at the same time, it was hard to turn off your brain with going, hey, where did they sneak in the where did they sneak in the cut?
Yeah. And I think there's, like, you could go full film student on how the result of this sort of turned out with, like, how, because clearly one, like, from one angle is the entire crew.
Yeah.
Like, all the shots seem to be moving in one direction every time. Mm. So, like, the amount of times the characters actually move from right to left across the screen is, like, twice in the whole thing.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it is, yeah, they are going in one direction.
Yeah.
But then you did kind of feel his urgency with that.
Mm. Well, you can read into that idea of, like, oh, this is all about, like, just, you know, just soldiering on, continuing forward, you know, and moving, like, progressing the story and stuff like that.
So, I mean, before talking more about, like, the film X, the cinematography of it,
yeah,
should probably just discuss just a short synopsis of, like, what the story is about. So basically it's just like, it's just two soldiers and I believe they're just both corporals.
I can't, the guy, spoilers, the guy who survives was Lance Corporal. So I don't know anything about military ranks.
Yeah, I'm the same as well. I'm like, I just know they're not privates. But basically, two of them get called in for a mission to deliver orders to the new front line to stop the advancing English army from trying to advance on the German line. Because they believe that the Germans have... Well, they've got pretty good intel that says the Germans have withdrawn. Mm. So they're trying to consolidate that and push forward.
Yeah.
But apparently the higher-ups have got aerial photography that actually shows that the Germans did a strategic retreat.
Mm.
And that they're deliberately trying to bait the English into advancing forward.
Yeah. And they've got a bunch of military hardware set up to just bomb the heck out of them.
Yeah.
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 And so...
So there's... And they've got basically just 24 hours to deliver this.
Yeah.
These orders.
And so the character selected to do this mission with somebody with personal stakes in it because their older brother is part of that troop. Or,
Yeah.
So I was really surprised when, like... Spoilers for this movie, because that's what we do. I was really surprised when the character with the most at stake in this movie dies about a third of the way through, and his friend, who was angry at his friend for not for just dragging him along on this death mission, is left to carry on this job.
And it is interesting as well, because I knew more about the character who died than the character who survived.
Mm.
I suppose you'd learn a little bit about him at the end when you finally check, because there's that parcel that he receives at the beginning and he keeps checking and you don't exactly know what's in it.
Yeah.
So you learn a little bit about him at the end when you finally see what he was looking at.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was weird. And interestingly enough, I was saying after we saw that movie, we looked at the movie poster and I'm like, well, thank goodness I didn't look at the movie poster before going into the movie.
Yeah.
Because the movie poster is just the one guy. And in all the advertising, and thankfully I hadn't seen a lot of advertising for this, all the advertising I had seen, I assumed it was going to be the two guys through the whole movie.
Yeah, well, and I just... Because the other thing is they set up that the guy who survives gets a pretty severe cut in the middle of his hand from handling some barbed wire. And then immediately trips and puts that hand inside a corpse.
Yeah.
Like, right through the ribs of...
And, like, everyone was like, ah.
there were audible gags in the cinema.
Across the cinema. I was like, ah, gross.
So I was like, that's just gonna... That infection's gonna spread, and by the time they get to where they need to go, he's gonna be dead.
And then on top of that, like, they set off a booby trap.
Yep.
And then
cause a cave in a German trench.
Yeah, and he gets buried in rubble, and I'm like, oh, well, that's it, he's dead.
Yeah. Well, and
so much horrible stuff happens to him, and the other guy just dies from a gut wound.
Yeah, he just gets stabbed in the tummy, and and then he's down. But it sets up that, like, how much the character who dies. I can't remember either of these characters' names, by the way, because I don't think they really ever say them.
No, I remember the guy who will survive at the end. His name was Schofield.
Yeah, because he says that to to the older brother, and I think he does get called Sko a couple of times. Or
yeah, that's it. Scoff. And the other guy's name is the other dude who dies, Blake.
Yeah,
Blake and Schofield.
Ah, that was it. Yeah, because that was his last name anyway. Yeah. But yeah, so establishing Blake as this heroic character who saves Schofield a couple of times before dying himself, like, really makes you believe that Schofield actually wants to complete the mission for him as much as for the rest of the army.
Yeah, he's got personal stakes in it then. Schofield's character then going forward, it was a little bit interesting just to see, a character, just one character by himself moving forward through that story.
Yeah.
Because the problem was when you had Blake and Schofield, you can tell what their internal emotions might be and what their internal, what they might be feeling by how they're talking to each other.
Yeah.
But once you lose another character to bounce dialogue off, I didn't quite understand. Like, I kind of got his motivations, as you said. He's doing it for his friend, who's now died. But yeah, I didn't really feel... I don't know. Especially after that scene where he passes out.
Yeah.
I felt like he just gave up on delivering the message then.
I don't know. Like, so hang on. I'm trying to remember which scene. because immediately after Blake dies...
Yeah.
Some army guys turn up to help, like, move Blake's corpse to somewhere more peaceful.
Yeah.
And he's sort of folded into this other regiment temporarily. And hearing them talk and what they're going through and how completely different it is to what Schofield's going through.
Yeah.
Was a really, like, it gave you this stark contrast immediately.
Mm.
And then when they get bogged and Schofield's like, just crying, trying to push the car forward.
Yeah.
Because he's in such a hurry to get this mission done, because now he can't let his friend die in vain.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You get that across really well.
That's the thing, because there he was, in those scenes, he's acting off the other people.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can see what emotions he's feeling there. But I'm talking about, like, directly after they're in the convoy, they go forward, the bridge is out, they can't go any further, so he breaks off from the convoy and goes and does his own thing.
Yeah.
And he's getting sniped by someone in a tower.
Yeah.
So he makes a desperate effort to rush the tower and shoot him.
And
then he gets knocked out then.
Yeah.
And that's the only, like, as far as I can remember, that's the only, like, hard cut.
Like, screen goes black for 10 seconds.
To the continual shots.
Mm.
And then he wakes up. Now he's got no character to act off. Now he's pushing forward through the trenches during...
A sort of a rubble town.
Yeah, like, it must have been bombed out or something.
Well, and then he runs into the woman in the basement with the baby.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you're right. It does sort of become like, oh, the mission takes a back seat right now to helping these two.
Yeah.
And it's a bit ambiguous as to how much time has passed.
Yeah.
So I can sort of see why, in some ways, he might have just gone, look, survival is more important right now, and doing what I've got to do is more important. So
it kind of felt like at that point when he gets knocked out, we lost the momentum. Because I felt the urgency the whole time from when they were issued the mission and they're, like, pressing on.
Mm.
Schofield's like, says to Blake in the beginning, can we just wait till nightfall to do it?
Yeah.
Blake's like, nah, we've got to do it. We've got to,
do
it immediately. And we had that urgency. And then as soon as he blacks out, you're right. I don't know what time of day it is anymore.
Mm.
I don't know how far he's, how much longer he's got to be able to now progress.
Yeah. For all we know, he's missed the deadline.
Yeah.
And that regiment's died.
Yeah.
And
that's the thing, when he finally finds the regiment, he thinks he's failed. And the regiment says, well, no, we're not all pushing in one go, we're the last to go over.
Yeah.
And then he suddenly twigs, oh, I've got a bit of time.
Yeah, I can still save somebody.
And in that classic movie, down to the last, you know, 11th hour kind of thing. Mm. Yeah.
And, like, the movie does sort of... It starts in these trenches where everything's cramped and he's constantly, like, trying to swim through people. And it ends in that same situation, but with way more urgency.
Yeah.
Like, the movie sort of is really paced well in that it does sort of... It does open up and give you a bit more of a better view of what's actually going on with soldiers in their particular situation.
Yeah.
And then zooms back into, like, no, this is what a battle's like. This is what is going on in the actual trench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An interesting thing as well that I just want to point out as well is you never really see the enemy.
Yeah, that's true.
And I mean, so in World War One, they were fighting for years. Like, I think it was at least 3 years by this point. You may have to correct me.
Yeah.
But they were fighting for years in trenches, and they never saw each other. They could have been 5 meters away from each other because they were always performing, like, operations to dig closer to the enemy's front line and that. And they never saw each other.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you were attacked indirectly. You were bombed by artillery from, like, miles back. Or you stuck your head over the line and some guy shot you from miles off.
Yeah.
We never really see the enemy at all in this. I think the one time you actually get a good look at anyone is when he's moving through the bombed town and he has to try and stealthily take out one of the guys.
Mm. And even then it's so, like, shadowy that, like, for a hot second I really thought that he
the one being choked. Yeah, that's the thing, because you didn't actually know who was winning in that fight.
Mm.
So that's interesting, and that's an interesting way that they've kind of mirrored that in how World War, you know, how World War One was,
And how people would try and dehumanize their enemy as much as possible, and so that I think we very rarely hear them being called the Germans by anybody on the front lines. We hear a couple of, like, officers say it.
Well, it was mainly the...
The Huns.
The Huns, yeah, because Hungary and that. And yeah, that's a lot of things. Like, I mean, this is near the German front, but they weren't the main aggressors in World War One as in World War Two.
Yeah, well, yeah. So this is probably showing my ignorance more than anything else. I assumed that they were saying Huns as in, like... like Attila the Hun, like they are this, like, ragtag band of, like, of barbarians.
Yeah,
yeah, more than they were from Hungary.
but yeah, it's like, I mean, obviously, we don't, and as a movie viewer, not a lot of people are going to know World War One as well as...
World War Two is just so much...
World War Two, yeah.
Well, it's so much easier to wrap your head around. People have this idea of, like, it's good guys and bad guys. It's this half of the world versus that half, you know, versus this one country that now dominates this half of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just... Yeah, World War One was just, like, a shit show for everybody.
And it was an interesting part of human history as far as technology was concerned. Because, like we were saying, you have the ability to kill people discreetly from a distance, but not enough to be like we are now, where it's, like, drone strikes and they're from the other side of the world. So everyone's still on the front lines risking their lives. There's still heaps of human casualties.
This was, like, the last war that bayonets were used in as well.
Yeah, and horses and shit.
And horses, yeah, jeez. And that's the thing, like, because in this war, they just, they had no idea how to fight on this sort of a scale. And one of the things that shows up in the film is everybody who was usually in a high-ranking position during World War One were there because they were from, like, a family of influence, or they were, like, a duke or something. And they were deemed too important to go into the trenches, but they were, like, just because of who they were in social standing, they were deemed good enough to be, military advisors.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they made stupid decisions, and yeah, wouldn't have no problem sacrificing the lives of thousands of men just for a military commendation.
Well, and, like, you could hear that in just even, like, in their accents and the way they talk to people. Like there's the scene where the there's a tree on the road and they're and the people are trying to like pick it up with their hands yeah. and move it because I don't know what his rank would be, yeah. but the posh toff in his bloody car yeah. can't get around it, and he's slapping the guy who's driving the car like, come on. Just go around it. You yeah. can.
Yeah.
It's like
put your backs into it. And that's the thing. And like when they meet Mark Strong's character. Again, I don't know what rank he was because they don't really mention any of these guys' names.
No.
But even then, he tells Schofield, when you give the commander the orders, make sure there's enough people around to hear.
Mm.
Because a lot of these guys may just ignore the orders.
Because they want the fight.
Yeah, because they want the fight. That's right. Because he's like, a lot of men just want the fight. Mm. That's one of the things I thought might happen at the end. I thought maybe he's going to deliver these orders and it's just going to be ignored.
It's going to be for nothing. And they sort of baited that they, like when we finally meet Benedict Cumberbatch, he really doesn't want to give up the fight.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was a real testament to Schofield's character that he had the balls to keep fighting to get those orders across.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like these celebrity cameos that we got, I think were used to a pretty good effect too, in the way that like we recognize these people, so we almost went
We know they're important.
Well, we know that they're important, but that they're also not army people.
Yeah.
We know that that's Sherlock.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and like we were discussing it the other day, we're like, these people get used in the movie because they're famous and therefore they can show up and do just a small bit. But you're immediately like, hey, I trust in what this guy says because his actor usually plays these kinds of characters.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And it makes me wonder how this then dates the film in future.
Yeah. And because that is something that will corrode as people forget about who these actors were. But at the same time, I think it still gets across clearly enough, even if you didn't know who they were. Yeah. There's a few actors there that I recognize, but I didn't know the name of. And
yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, like I think it probably will be fine, but it's probably the best use of celebrity cameos that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the time, it's just we had enough money to get this person, so that'll make our movie sell more tickets. Let's just put them in, rather than to give like an actual mechanical purpose to their part of the story, and get across that these aren't like that these people who are leading the armies aren't necessarily army people.
Yeah,
they're just rich people that rich we recognize. People.
Yeah, which is interesting. So I guess. Talking more about the... So that's probably enough about the story. Mm. I would say, more just from the technical points of view. Actually, an interesting thing, because this was directed by Sam Mendes, and at the end, there's a... what do you call it? End plate? Pops up and says, thank you for so-and-so Mendes for sharing these stories. And looking into it, this is like a retelling of, Sam Mendes's, grandfather.
Right.
Like, this is a story based off something that his grandfather, was involved in or told, having a quick, Alfred Mendes. That's his grandfather was Alfred Mendes. And at the end it says, in memory of Alfred Mendes, who brought these stories to us.
Yeah.
So there was like an actual personal connection for the director to the story, which is really interesting.
Mm. And it's something that like we are just straight up not going to see a lot of this going on in the future. Like as it drifts further into the past, we're going to get less and less accurate stories from the front lines. And this is probably not that accurate. It's probably very embellished.
But it is interesting because, I mean, like, we were just saying, like, we can't... Like, the two of us, we're not going to be the best at knowing who was even the main aggressor or what was the whole point behind World War One. World War Two is been done to death in movies, and we know Germans were the bad guys. Yeah. But in this, Germans were, weren't the main aggressors. It is interesting that, we are kind of losing, as new generations come along, we're kind of forgetting what had happened in World War One.
I think that that's a bit of a double-edged sword as far as how our technology is progressing. It's that we know that we don't need to know, that it's recorded, and that somebody else on some website somewhere has it.
So we just don't bother filing it away.
Exactly. So we never save it in our local storage. We keep it in cloud storage.
Yeah, fair enough. But at the same time, you're losing the emotional weight to that if you just save it on... if it's just saved online.
Well, exactly. Like, we can't analyze movies like this to their fullest extent because we don't understand the source material. Whereas, like, comics and shit like that...
way more important,
Stuff that we've actually invested some time into. And even then, like, we're... like, I know I've read, like, exactly zero comics, but I know what Tony Stark's deal is. I know what Peter Parker's deal is. Yeah. Like...
well, because it's part of the cultural zeitgeist, to use a really worn-out term. But yeah, just people just aren't discussing World War One like they used to anymore.
I mean, who knows? Maybe World War III will roll around, and it'll be more topical.
Knock on wood.
And then these youngsters will finally understand.
That's why I've been stockpiling all this scrap iron. Buying war bonds.
Wonderful. I'm not sure I have much left to say on this movie that's not going to make me sound even more out of touch.
The thing is receiving a bunch of, like, Oscar nods and things like that, and heaps of just, like, Golden Globe in that. I don't know. Look, again, who cares with awards?
The specific awards? Like, because the main thing is that it's getting some buzz.
Yeah.
From people who aren't even necessarily the film toffs at the Oscars or anybody like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the actual audience score of this. Like, can you bring up Rotten Tomatoes for this?
So having a quick look on Rotten Tomatoes. Audience score is 89%. Critic response is 90%.
That's rare.
That's rare that the two are joined together.
That's what I think is really important here, is that, like, this, that's what's going to get people to care a little bit more about World War One, is making a movie like this that people like to see.
Yeah.
Not necessarily critics, but, like, actual moviegoers.
Well, I think... yeah, aside from the war story, it is just an amazing technical achievement in this continual shot thing. And it makes me wonder if anybody else ever adopts it as a gimmick for something else.
Because, you weren't on the episode, but Sam and I were talking about the Haunting of Hill House.
And that continual scene.
Yeah, near the end of the season where they had that.
Beautiful shot as well, yeah.
It was like 3 15-minute long scenes was the whole...
yeah. But that's the thing, like, that, those continual shots build up, like, they make it so intense. They make you, they build up the suspense, not the suspense, just the...
Well, I think the way Sam said it was a pretty good approximation, is that when you get a cut, it's like your brain can breathe.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I felt like the continual shot thing in this is awesome, but... one entire continual shot did make me just scared to blink. But then again, like, going over the theater, the whole theater was so quiet and so enraptured with it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just because we watched it at a good theater. But I can remember a few times I leaned over to the guy who was sitting with me, Mike, and said to him, you know, like, I can't remember what I commented on, but like, when he responded, it just like echoed across the whole theater because... he was the only one talking, and he's American, and he's hella loud.
But also, like, to tell a really personal story, I think it works really well to make you feel like you are getting one person's perspective. And to have that perspective be unbroken, like your own perspective on life is, important. Like, it does a good job of, like, really putting you in the shoes of somebody who's actually there.
Yeah.
Whereas, as soon as, like, now it's going to be weird. It would be weird watching this and then, like, just any movie that does do more cuts, because it must break your immersion, at least to a certain degree.
It does, because, I mean, yeah, as soon as they swap to, like, an establishing shot or something like that, I think a lot of times, you know, where it's, like, establishing the whole... Like, if they took pictures and it was, like, a whole picture of the battlefield, you know it's just going to be a bit of a dead scene that's just there to make you take it in.
Yeah.
So sometimes you know, you may look away or talk or something like that.
You subconsciously know that you don't need to pay 100% attention right now.
Yeah.
But whereas, yeah, when it's on the ground and you are just like a third perspective from these other two characters and you're going through the same shit with them and it's unbroken, yeah, it means that it forces you to pay attention.
Yeah.
And I think there could be some like really good uses for that in other movies, but we're probably not going to get them.
Yeah, I think this would probably be... I don't think going forward we're going to get movies that could take one continual shot again.
It's probably just too hard for a lot of things, but yeah. I'd just like to see more longer scenes. Like, I haven't seen John Wick.
Yeah.
But I was going to say that it seems like that's the sort of movie that would do really well to have one very continual shot.
Well, that's the thing. Like, every John Wick movie, there's that one scene where it is one continual shot.
Cool.
And they're like, we're not going to cut away for the fight.
I feel smart now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. and yeah, that is really good for those kinds of scenes. And I do hope this forces other filmmakers and other cinematographers to maybe have a look at not doing 10,000 fucking jump cuts.
Yeah.
Every time there's a fight scene.
That's what was so interesting about, like, the opening fight scene in Aquaman.
Yeah.
Where it's Nicole Kidman is, like, doing flips over the table. But, like, the camera just moves around the room to give better angles on it. But there's no cuts.
Yeah.
And we see everything properly.
Yeah. Which is done well, yeah. And it's like... One of the best fight scenes in recent years is obviously the Daredevil corridor fighting scene.
Yeah, single shot.
Done very cleverly. I don't know if you've ever seen Old Boy.
No.
But yeah, the original movie Old Boy's got a beautiful corridor fight scene, and that's basically like the inspiration for like the Daredevil corridor fight scene. Well, beautiful from a technical point of view. It's actually quite horrific to watch. yeah, and... That's actually brings up an interesting point, because Old Boy, and I just stick with me here, because I know you haven't seen it, but people might know what I'm talking about. The original corridor fight scene is done so well in that, and the momentum is done so well. They redid Old Boy a few years ago by, I think, Spike Jonze did it or something, and he completely missed the point of the continual, because they do one long shot in that as well.
Yeah.
And it's done horribly. and it's a continual shot as well. So there is ways to do this bad.
Yeah. Well, you should get those two shots and do a YouTube video comparing them. You should.
I'm pretty sure it's out there already. Now, a lot of people were peeved off by that scene.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Point is, you should do it.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, so I think, yeah, from a technical point of view, this is very, very interesting. And especially if you go to when there's scenes with so many, like there's been continual shots before where there's quite a few actors, but to have so many actors in this and to not have anybody look directly at the camera or to not... you know, to have everybody hit their marks or say their lines correctly.
Yeah. Having it ruin a whole, like, very long chunk of the film. Because it wasn't like every 5 minutes or so there was something that clearly made a cut possible. Like, they happened, but they were pretty few and far between.
Yeah.
So, like, this film was still a huge achievement to do.
Yeah, and I'd be really interested in seeing the making of for this. But again, like I said, sometimes it was distracting because you were like, how did they pull off the shot?
Yeah. And I think that might just be a film nerd thing. Like, maybe...
I suppose. But, like, yeah, because that was the thing. Sometimes I completely wasn't paying attention to what was going on. I was just like, how do they get on that raft? How would they be filming this shot?
Yeah.
Like, the shot that stuck out for me is in the beginning when they're crossing the trenches, and they go over a trench, which is obviously a crane shot, and they're walking around the inside of the trench to avoid the water, and the crane shot sweeps round and goes across the water, and I'm like, that would be on a raft or something? And then the crane shot comes out the other side, and then obviously keeps continually following them for the rest. There is a scene there where it goes past a fence, and the fence beam passes in front, and I'm like, that's where they would have snuck in a cut.
Yeah.
But still, I'm like, how do they do some of these things? And is it CGI? Am I just...
Yeah.
Mm. So, yeah, very just... Bravo, even just on the technical point of view.
And I hope that... I would sort of just be fine if this did become a fad. It sort of has. Like, the Daredevil fight scene, I think, really ignited it in people's sort of minds of, like, let's do one long continuous shot again,
yeah.
But, like, I would like to see this, and this is really dumbing this down to put it into, like, a comic book perspective, but I'd almost like to see, like, a Batman movie where we see it from, like, one thug's perspective for this scene,
yeah,
that just watches all his friends slowly get picked off by Batman swooping in, and
that something like that would be really cool. Or a Marvel movie where the fight scene is one continual shot instead of 42,000 different jump cuts.
Oh man, I'm getting really sick of those, where especially when they use like motion blur to mask things where the CGI doesn't look as good or whatever, and they just, you can't see half the shit that's going on. If the airport fight scene was like one sort of camera that was a character moving through and analyzing the footage, that could have been like really interesting.
Peter Parker filming it on his phone.
Yeah.
There's one continual shot. Yeah.
See, that could be really interesting actually, if there was a Spider-Man thing where he's got like a body cam on and you can see it from that perspective. Shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, interesting, and that's the thing. That's the biggest takeaway from that.
Oh,
two big things on this: to bring back a World War One film like this late, so and to tell a really important story that was really important to the director, and to just use a really impressive technical way of filming it
that complement each other really well.
Yeah. To make a really personal story, personal to just the one character in the film, and personal to us by making us stick with that one character the whole time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just cinematography and filming as a craft, and just as a way for it to not stagnate, it needs to change and develop. And this is really interesting. I think it's really important for what it's done in that regard.
And if we weren't just comic book hack Disney shills... By the end of the year, this probably would win some sort of technical muffin award.
Yeah.
But we don't do technical muffin awards. So,
well, maybe now you do.
We'll see. Who knows what 2021 is going to bring for muffin awards.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that might be that might be a good place to wrap up this bad boy.
Fair enough.
So
what do you think is going to be the next film then?
What, the next one that we talk about?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even
Bad
know.
Bad Boys for Life? I'm looking at what's coming out. Bad Boys for Life. Doolittle.
Oh, man, Doolittle. That looks so bad.
It looks so bad. I've got Rotten Tomatoes open still, and 18, so that might be fun to watch.
And I know you're a Guy Ritchie nerd, so maybe we could do Gentlemen.
Oh, God, yeah, please.
Yeah, let's do that. We'll talk about Snatch.
Yeah, I badly want to watch a good Guy Ritchie film again.
I'll watch Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yep, and then we'll watch Aladdin.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. That's the last Guy Ritchie film.
We can straight up do a Guy Ritchie cast if you want to.
See how badly he went off the rails.
Fair enough. Yeah, cool. Let's lock that in.
You should watch the one he made when he was married to Madonna.
Oh, I've heard of that.
What's it called? Head in the Clouds or something?
I can't remember, but there's a guy who does like music reviews on YouTube. Todd in the Shadows is his YouTube channel. And he did this whole series of like all the movies Madonna did. Oh, God. Oh man. But yeah, that does sound terrible. Yeah. But I loved Snatch, and I loved Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels when I was a kid. So yeah, I reckon that's what we should do next. We'll do Gentlemen. If it's
the return to Guy Ritchie gangster films, 100%.
Cool. Let's wrap it up there. Tweet us. What did you think of 1917? What would you like to see? What property would you like to see use a long continual shot?
Yeah. What do you think will benefit from just long continual shots?
Let us know at Video Shot Pod on Twitter. See you, nerds.